Michigan HockeyCast 6.25, where they see us grading, hopefully not hating, just trying to be learning. Do you know what time it is? Time to get a new watch.
Earth Day, I think.
Is it actually?
I believe it is.
Is that why everyone's out on the diag?
I saw people on Instagram posting about it. So,
have you celebrated Earth Day? Why are we talking about this? I'm moving on past this. All right.
I took out my shovel.
Again. There's one. Craig's like halfway through mowing the lawn, fertilizing, shoveling, raking. So maybe it is Earth Day.
Yeah.
He planned this ahead of time. This is some 7D chess from Craig. All right. Against my better judgment, I've agreed to talk about the NHL playoff series, which I have no hope for anything that I want to have happening. So we can go through each series and advise people to watch them for a few days and then move on to something more enjoyable. All right. We can start in the Western Conference with... Well, let's start with the Whopper, since you're a Burger King fast food fan. Probably, like, the craziest series that... Well, not the craziest series, but, like, maybe one of the more anticipated ones. Dallas and Vegas, who, I guess, like, throughout the year, I kind of never dreamed that they would face each other. And it's a 1-8, technically, but it kind of doesn't feel that way.
Yeah, the Stars got stuck with the Sedin-era Canucks treat... or curse of being
treat
of being the one seed where you draw an insane 8 seed. In 2011, they drew the reigning Stanley Cup champion Chicago Blackhawks despite winning the President's Trophy. And then the next year, they drew the LA Kings, who were
going to win
2 of the next 3.
Yeah.
So, the Stars got that unfortunate turn of events. And,
or fortunate, if you don't like the Stars.
I love this series. This is a rematch of multiple Western Conference finals in the past few years, including last year's.
Do you see it going less than 6 games?
I would be surprised.
I kind of would be, too.
The interesting news today is that Logan Thompson is starting for Vegas, which isn't surprising because he outplayed Aiden Hill down the stretch in that way, but it is surprising in that they are benching the goalie that won the Stanley Cup last year. So
I mean, okay, but it feels like for Vegas, like, that's just a shirt, right?
Sure.
Like, it's defense, it's systems, it's coaching, it's that kind of thing. Like, as long as you don't have, you know, Alexander Georgiev in net, you have a chance to win.
Yeah, this is an interesting series because it's just a matter of, can Vegas find its game, right? Because they just really didn't play well for a large stretch of this season, including in the last few weeks where they played, they lost the game against Anaheim on the final day that would have gotten them a matchup with Edmonton instead. They lost a crazy game to the deceased Coyotes a few weeks back where they gave up like 6 goals on 7 shots in the third period. Just weird stuff's been happening to this team, but on paper, they can match the Stars toe for toe.
Sure. On paper, they can repeat.
Yeah.
It seems like they probably won't because, like, it's just so hard to do that when you're playing these long of seasons and at some point, like, you know, things catch up to you. But, like, both coming into this, coming into the season, both these teams are, like, quote-unquote, you know, sort of Stanley Cup contender favorites, and somehow they're playing in the first round. Also, like, half of the Vegas team is, like, the gif of the Undertaker rising out of the coffin at the end.
Yeah.
Like, so I don't know. I don't know. I'm a fan of this going 7 and these teams literally and figuratively beating the ever living hell out of each other.
So. Yeah.
Winnipeg, Colorado, we can move right past this one and move on to, I mean, like, look, I thought the Avs played better than I expected last night, and, like, if any semblance of a goalie facing the right direction, they probably win this in a blowout, but that clearly will not happen with this particular starter. In fact, he might not play again for this team.
Are they going to go to Anaheim?
I mean, I don't know. It feels like they have to. Like, what do you... Well, so here's the thing. This is why they might not. Anaheim was like sick. So he wasn't even the backup last night. So, you know, I mean, they're probably not going to play Arvid Holm, who I didn't even know who he was. I mean, at this point, we're like an injury and a cold away from Jacob Bartreski, which, what an experience of hockey for me in a year. But anyway, I don't think Colorado's out of the series. I think they can still win it if they get actual goaltending, and it's probably not going to come from Georgie. But, like, I don't know. It's tough to beat Hellebuyck six times and then lose.
Yeah. That's all I have to say. If you had gotten those, the odds on Hellebuyck giving up six and winning would have been fascinating before
You might have been able to retire.
Yeah, it was. I don't know. It was an interesting game. I thought the Jets played okay for stretches. They were not doing a great job in that third period, but they just, you know, everything was going in. It was a bizarre game.
I mean, that one goal was like over by what, like a millimeter?
Yeah.
And then like Wood gets his second goal taken away off of nothing when the puck isn't frozen.
I expect game two will be a very different kind of game.
Yes.
I think it'll be much more restrained. I mean, it's the Jets don't play like that in general. They don't play that kind of game. And
Do you remember game one of the Avs and Oilers? Would have been the Western Conference Finals.
I didn't watch it live, but I do remember that.
But that was like story. It was like 7-6 or 7-5 or 8-whatever. And then the next game was like a traditional 2-1, 3-1 game where both teams play better.
Generally, how it goes. I still expect this one to be a pretty long series. So we'll.
Well, I wish I had your faith, Alex. So the next series begins tonight. Was going to be interesting, and then I don't know, you probably have more belief in the Kings than I do, but
I don't have much belief. I think it's just
Kings and Oilers.
Yeah, it's a third time around for this matchup.
Yeah. I mean, that's another one where neither of the first two were, I mean, they were kind of interesting for like half to a series.
Last year's was kind of interesting. The Kings were up 2-1. They were up, weren't they up 3-0 in game four? And then the Oilers.
But it was like early, right?
Yes. Yeah. And the Oilers came storming back, and then it unraveled for the Kings. But it's the Kings. I just don't like the Oilers matchup for them.
Yeah.
Because the Kings, as we know, a very low event team, very defensively oriented team. And it just kind of seems to me like the Oilers are a team that has the ability to pierce through their neutral zone forecheck that mucks a lot of teams down just because they have McDavid, they have Draisaitl, they have some guys that can cut through it. They did okay against the Oilers in the regular season. They were 1-1-1 against the Oilers, but again, we've seen this. We've just kind of seen that the Oilers shooters end up overpowering LA goaltending as the series goes along. So I don't know. It's the Kings are a hard team to get a feel for because they played a bizarre season where they were just dominant for a couple
months.
They're
good, then
really
awful,
bad for a while. Then, they fired the coach, and then they were just kind of okay down the stretch. The Oilers are a better team. They've got home ice. I expect Edmonton to win, but if they don't, then things could get pretty messy in northern Alberta.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably pick Edmonton at some point. I mean, it is interesting that you get basically teams are on two opposites, like the spectrum of styles of play, right? Where the Oilers are as high event team as you get, and the Kings are about as low. And Kings Islanders would be the lowest of event series.
Like
anyway,
the Flyers Caps game. Yeah. Last week.
And then the final Western Conference series, Vancouver Nashville. This could be kind of interesting. It was a little last night. I watched a bit.
It was a fun game last night.
But I still feel like Vancouver probably in the end wins, but Nashville does not seem like a pushover, and if they go home, I could see them getting a game or two and like kind of dragging the series out. But in the end, I don't know that they have enough to win.
Yeah, Nashville's a good team. They really turned their season around after the U2 concert cancellation.
How many times are we going to bring this up?
But there was a lot of fun talk about that because the Canucks' long-time entrance music for the playoffs is Where the Streets Have No Name, and so there's just like a lot of U2 discourse in this series. But anyway, old Big Ten hockey friend was the story of last night's game.
Your boy!
Dakota Joshua, 2 goals and an assist in that game. He's had a really shockingly... It turned into a shockingly good NHL player for what any of us would have imagined way back when.
I mean, he was sort of a guy at Ohio State. He wasn't bad.
No.
But he was not clearly a future NHL fixture.
But he managed to... He's a big guy. He can hit, and he can kill penalties, and then he kind of put it together and scored 18 goals this year. And
two last night, didn't he?
Yep. And But part of that is just he plays with Connor Garland, one of my favorite players in the NHL, and that line with Elias Lindholm is really good. I thought this was a good matchup for Vancouver. I thought they played a good game last night. The Preds are a high-flying offensive team in the way they play. They love to get the defensemen in the rush, send four up ice. They look for stretch passes and the breakouts, and the Canucks have a pretty good defensive structure. They're pretty good at slowing games down, choking off rush chances, and I think that matchup's just good. And everything that Nashville can do, the Canucks can kind of match, right? Where Nashville's like, oh, we've got one of the best defensemen in the NHL. The Canucks are like, so do we. And the Preds are like, well, what happens if our really good goalie gets hot? And the Canucks are like, well,
we have also a goalie, yeah.
So it's just, and the Canucks forward lineup's just a little deeper. So I expect the Canucks to win this series, but you never know.
Moving over to the Eastern Conference, the Islanders and Hurricanes. I watched a lot of game one of this series, and I did not have the Islanders outplaying Carolina and getting goalied.
They played a really good game.
Not. you figured it would be the other way around, right? I mean, like that the Islanders' best chance was to potentially goalie.
Yeah, I liked the Islanders as an upset in this matchup last year when they played, and it didn't really come to pass. But both these teams, I think, are better than they were last year.
Mm-hmm.
The Canes have added some scoring muscle, and I think the Islanders are a lot better because they have a real coach.
Well, they also have depth scoring, too. I mean, like, Palmieri's almost around 30 goals, and Nelson's scoring goals, and Barzal and Horvat has had a nice year, too. So it's not just, like, one or two guys that one line that needs to click.
The interesting thing, I think, about this matchup is just that the Islanders are going with Varlamov, which obviously they rode him down the stretch and everything. But like that's something, if you go back to like the start of the season, people would not have said, like, oh, this is a thing that's going to happen.
Well, but Sorokin just had a fine year, but it wasn't what he's like the standard that he's set over
Varlamov's
the last
a good goalie. Yep. Been a good goalie for a long time, one of the more underrated goalies of his era. And so I'm glad for him to get to battle here. I mean, I expect the Islanders to win some games in this series, but I do think Carolina will win. But it was a good showing in that first game from the Islanders. They just couldn't quite get the bounces and had some chances they just couldn't bury. And
yeah, Dobson had a chance to take the lead in the third and just couldn't elevate the puck. I agree. I think that maybe the Islanders get 1-2 and Carolina probably moves on. The Rangers and the Capitals, if there's a sweep in the first round that doesn't involve Colorado, I would think that this is the highest percent chance for a sweep.
Yeah, the Capitals got into the playoffs against their will. And
they were dragged in. They turned it down, had tee times. Nope, you got to go.
They beat the Flyers in a game that, if it did not have everything at stake, would have put you to sleep. the first goal in... They made the playoffs because they scored two goals in that game, one of which was a shot by Dylan McIlrath, mostly an AHLer, Grand Rapids Griffins legend, and on a shot going like 15 feet wide of the net that bounced off Ovechkin's chest and into the net. And their second goal was an empty netter in regulation.
Which you don't see very often.
During a tie game... Because Tortorella had to play for a regulation win.
If you had that on your bingo card.
And they got spared by a bizarre continuation play, an erroneous whistle, just a bizarre playoff chase. Here's what I'll say about this. The Red Wings, I don't know if they were a better team than the Capitals. They didn't beat them when it mattered, so the Capitals deserved to be there. But if the Red Wings were there, it would be a more fun series. That's what I would tell you.
Yeah.
Red Wings might not win any games, like the Capitals might not, but they'd at least be in like 7-5 games or something.
Yeah.
Whereas this is, you know, the Caps play a pretty low event. They just try and grit their teeth because they can check pretty well and they have a good goalie. But
and that's why it feels like maybe the Caps could steal a game.
I wouldn't be shocked if they do. It's hard to sweep somebody
that's
in hockey,
true.
So...
That is true. I still have the Rangers coming out.
Oh, yeah. It's
That one's probably as slam dunk a series as there is.
Yeah.
Boston and Toronto, you and I watched this game together.
There will be a second game having been played by the time people listen to this.
That is true. There are games tonight, just like the Islanders and, actually, a lot of games.
Well, two of them are starting, so.
Okay. I will kick this over to you because this is partially your thing.
Well, it didn't go too well for the Leafs in game one.
Because of a mysterious injury?
Yeah, that continues to be mysterious. It doesn't sound like Nylander's going to play tonight. He was on ice at least, but he didn't take line rushes, so we'll see what happens.
Was he just standing there? Like, what? How do you, what do you do when you don't take line rushes, but you're just...
You're just skating around. Just
doing cardio?
You do little drills with the other scratches, basically, like in the corner, but...
With the dunce hat? Okay, continue.
And but that's a huge loss for the Leafs, and it wasn't the only reason they lost the game in on Saturday night, but any team, if you say delete a 100-point scorer, 40-goal scorer from the lineup, is going to do great. But the Leafs, with their top-heavy salary structure in particular, are just vulnerable to that kind of thing, and the theory of the case for this team was that they had decided, oh, we're going to split up Matthews, Marner, and Nylander under three different lines, and particularly in this series, a big thought of why they could win is that, oh, we could have Nylander drive a line and outscore Geeky and Trent Frederick on Boston's third line, and now that you don't have that available, it makes it a lot tougher, and through the regular season, the Bruins own the Leafs. They won all four games. Two were in overtime, but they did win all four. They scored first in all four games. They led wire to wire in all the games. The Leafs just never could find any traction against this team, and they couldn't figure out how to get a goal past Swayman during the regular season. But they got to find some answers, because in game one, Swayman was a lot better than Samsonov. He didn't play a great game. His special teams was a big problem. And it's really hard to win a series when you have the worst goalie and worst special teams. Like, you just aren't going to win many with that formula, and... So they're fighting uphill, but there's one thing you say about the Matthews-Marner era in the playoffs is that while they always lose, they never lose easily. They always drag it out and
keeping the
make it go for six or seven games
last.
Yes.
So. We do have to shout out Johnny Beecher for scoring a goal, because we watched that was the first goal of the series, and I was beyond shocked when I found out who scored.
There was a lot of fun, like, Leafs fan discourse of just people like, who the F is John Beecher?
Well, first of all, if you don't know he's Johnny, you've missed the boat. But good for him. Finally got into the NHL playoffs. Florida and Tampa is the last series. This is an interesting one. I think for a while we all had Florida kind of coming out of the East, and then they decided to take about, what, few weeks to a month off, and
yeah, they had a bit of a slump down the stretch.
I don't know.
They're the better team than Tampa, but the Lightning have a lot of good players, and that game on Sunday was pretty close. So I expect this to be a six or seven game series. Maybe it won't be if Florida really turns it on, but the Lightning have enough good players. I'm glad that this has finally become like a rivalry.
Is it?
Yeah, I mean,
are there enough people down there that care?
Well, between the fans who are fans.
All right.
And they play, this is now their third meeting in four playoffs. They played in 21, 22, and now 24.
That sounds right.
This is, and the Lightning won each of the first two, so if the Panthers do win this, then you kind of got it going. It's what I'll say about the playoff format, a lot of people don't like it and how it's unfair to really good teams, right, as opposed to one versus eight, blah, blah, blah. The one thing you can say about it is that it really, they always said they wanted to do it because it would create rivalries, and they did succeed at that. And
it's not always the rivalries that you were going for,
no,
but there
but
are some sort of rivalries.
Like it's invented some rivalries in a lot of these divisions, and this is one of them it's helped create, and it's fun. It's fun to have an interstate battle, and there's a lot of really skilled offensive players, and you got the battle between the two Russian goalies. Like it's got some fun narratives, and I expect this to be a good series.
Yeah, the problem with this is that neither of these teams are like that quite. I mean, Tampa a little more because they've been successful, but they're not the most visible franchises. And so then you get like it's a good rivalry, but it's not like you know, Toronto and Boston. People like that just is going to draw
people. The original six, and
right.
Those are bigger fan bases and all that stuff. It's also just a little bit of the. I guess 22 was more of an overlap, but it 21 when these teams met, it felt like the Lightning were the big dog.
Yeah.
And in the Florida Panthers were the little dog trying to figure it out. And then 22, maybe they were more level. But now it kind of feels like this is the, like, Obi-Wan, Darth Vader, like, you know, now I'm the master sort of thing.
Well,
where the Florida's now the big dog and Tampa's faded a little bit, so.
I think that will be the case if Florida wins, but
yeah,
you don't get to claim a rivalry until you actually, like, win a series.
Sure.
So, but some good first-round matchups. NHL playoffs are always
first round
always
is, is a great round.
Yep.
It's hopefully there will be a lot
There's always plural games on, and then a second round of plural games, so you can usually make a fun long evening out of it. And
yeah, this is the one of the better sports weeks of the year with the NFL draft.
Oh,
we've also got the NBA playoffs. We've got some baseball games. This is a good time to own 15 TVs.
Hey, well, then you should. You know where to go when you want to watch a lot of sports. All right, we should move on to what we were here to do. The first of our sort of end-of-season podcasts is usually our grades, so that's what we're going to do. We're going to talk defensemen and goaltending in the first segment, and then we'll come back with forwards, and then we'll touch up on some news and notes of some additions that Michigan has picked up before going into next week's podcast, doing sort of a look-ahead. Not exactly a preview because it's way too early to do that, but at least looking at, like, okay, what is Michigan bringing back and how could they look next year? So we'll start with our grades for the 2023-24 season. Defense, so I just kind of group these into, or, you know, pairings, and then we'll go through the goalies and reserves and all of that. So I called the small pairing, which is Seamus Casey and Tyler Duke. We'll go through those guys. So Seamus Casey, probably Michigan's best defenseman on the year, I would say, overall. He was 7 goals, 38 assists for 45 points. And what did they play? Like, he missed a couple games, so probably about 39, I think, games he played, something like that. Still over a point per game. He was a second-round pick of the Devils. Sort of my notes on him are, like, I still say he's one of the best, if not the best, stick handler I've ever seen at Michigan for a defenseman.
I think he would have to be the best among a defenseman. I mean,
yeah. His thing is that he could create stuff from defense going forward. He was an awesome quarterback on the power play. They missed him in that regional, despite not necessarily coming back to haunt them, but very Makar-esque on the blue line, moves really well, can change angles to create openings for passes. And I gave him an A- because he had a little bit of a scoring drought when Michigan kind of needed him in the second half of the year. And also he can be had at times on defense because he's just not big enough and can get pushed around and isn't the most aggressive defensively. But, I mean, there's just pretty much not a hockey team I would watch that I wouldn't take a version of him. So I give him an A-.
Yeah, I think B+, A- is fine. He's a really good player, really important to what Michigan does. Again, he did have that stretch from February 3rd to March 1st where he had one assist in an 8-game period, and he did not record a point in the NCAA tournament, which is a little disappointing.
Well,
he missed the MSU game, but he did not score in the North Dakota or Boston College game.
He left
the North Dakota game early.
Right, so he played 4 periods in the NCAA tournament.
You'd still like to have a...
Well, it would have been great if there was one against BC.
Boston College. Yeah, exactly. So, but, you know, at the end of the day, good player and had a good season. Hopefully he will be back next season. But
I mean, it seems like it, right? Like, there's been no...
I kind of think so. If he hasn't left yet. Signed yet, then you would think that he probably won't, but you never know. So
the Devils...
He hasn't put out a graphic saying, I'm back. So that's why it's a little up in the air.
Yeah. Although the Devils didn't make the playoffs, and their AHL team didn't make the playoffs. So if he was going to sign, it would be to not play hockey.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, it's not like he's going somewhere to play something.
The only other thing about him, just to note a little bit, that knocks the grade down is that 22% of his points were against Lindenwood and Stonehill. So
really?
Yeah.
Well,
just it knocks it a little, but, still a good player, no doubt.
His mostly pairing mate was Tyler Duke, who was a sophomore, came over from Ohio State, had a nice freshman year with the Buckeyes, and then came up to Ann Arbor to play with his brother, and it seemed like a situation where kind of always wanted to be here, but couldn't get in the year before, and then Michigan had opening at the back end and came in as a transfer. He had 2 goals, 14 assists for 16 points. Not a drafted guy, still pretty undersized, but sort of played bigger than his size. That's sort of what
he's
it felt like.
He's got a bit
of
an edge to his game.
Yeah, not exactly an offensive defenseman, but can contribute a little bit. He's played with Seamus for... they played together, what, the NTDP, I believe, or in junior somewhere? They had a history
played
of playing,
NTDP, yeah.
Playing together. Kind of does everything, but not anything like elite, just always there, very rough physical. I gave him a B. I thought they got a little more than average out of him, not enough where you're like, this guy was on off the charts to get an A, but I was pretty satisfied with what Tyler Duke gave Michigan this year.
Yeah, I think B's fine. That's about what I had in my head. Interesting thing, he led the team in penalty minutes this year with 50. Because he got 14 against Penn State in the game where Rucker got hurt, and he got 12 in the MSU game.
Right, so like some of that is...
But again, that's showing that he's involved in scrums.
Yes.
And that's not bad.
Because, well, he's a Duke. He's
yeah, you need some guys that have some energy. And he had that one game against MSU that next night he had that heinous turnover that led to that goal. That was really bad. But outside of that, I don't remember a ton of defensive breakdowns from him. He'd get out-muscled sometimes, but yeah. I thought he was generally steady and fine. And plus 12 was one of the better plus-minus scores on the team. Doesn't mean a lot, but something to note. Solid season, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do next year.
Yeah, because it definitely feels like with a guy like him, you're going to get 2 more years.
Probably more than likely, yep.
Yep. Then the next pairing I had is the Truscott-Edwards pairing. Obviously, they didn't play together the whole year, and during the first half, everything was a big jumbled mess anyway. But Jacob Truscott is the captain. He was in his fourth year. Actually, identical numbers to Tyler Duke. 2 goals, 14 assists for 16 points. He was a fifth-round pick back in 2020. He just kind of had an up-and-down year. A lot of struggles in his own end. Not really an offensive guy. And my notes are just more like I just wanted a little bit more from him. And it didn't necessarily have to be offensively, but he needed to be a little bit more locked down defensively. And it just wasn't always the case. I did think he did get better as the season got later. And as Michigan started playing postseason hockey and towards the end of the regular season, I thought that he probably played his best that he'd played all year, which is a good thing because it sounds like he's coming back for next year. But I gave him a C because I think that if they get a lot more from him, maybe it doesn't change against Boston College, but it probably raises their level throughout the year and maybe even steals a win or two or more early on.
Yeah, I think C plus maybe is reasonable. For Truscott, it was a little disappointing. I expected him to be more of a force and more of a steadying presence defensively, and just wasn't for a large stretch. And eventually, Marshall Warren kind of raised his game, but Truscott didn't as much. And maybe that can happen next year. That would be nice. And to get him back is not bad at all because it gives them another guy who's played a lot of games. He's played 130 games.
Baseline is...
Yeah. And Marshall Warren was a fifth-year player this year, whereas Truscott was a fourth, so maybe he can make the same step forward.
His partner a lot in the second half was Ethan Edwards. Edwards obviously misses the first half of the season, which is a bummer because I think both you and I were sort of looking forward to what he was going to be able to do this year as a bit of a puck rusher. And he got some weird penalties that were... not all on him, but I had him. He's three goals and 7 assists for 10 points, but again, only playing, I think, 21 games is what he had. He was a fourth-round pick back in 2020, so he misses the first half. He produced all right in the second half with, just under half a point per game, but he did get beat a number of times on defense. You could just see whether it was a penalty or giving up a good chance or for a goal. If you extrapolate out a full season, he'd be around 20 points, which is not too bad. I gave him a B minus. I thought that he did create enough offense where there was a bit of a positive, but not enough to really kind of push him up to a guy who you could really count on in a ton of ways. He did have that nice regional, though, against in Maryland Heights, so we've got to give him props for that.
Yeah, B-minus is fine. I didn't notice him too much. He was pretty ordinary. But
you mean throughout the season?
Throughout the season, yeah. But he did really step up in when it mattered.
In Casey's absence, yep. Yeah.
And it's always kind of felt like to me that he has more to give.
Yeah.
But he's always been with different players that are a little more offensively focused or guys that are more natural to that role. And so then in those glimpses of Casey's absence and sometimes in the past, we've gotten to see that he has more in him. And I wouldn't mind seeing that a little more next season, play with a little more purpose up the ice. But
hopefully he plays a full season, too.
That would also be good. So, but it did feel like they missed him. And I think that has to be factored into the grade. That's just the reality of the defensive depth chart. But yep. They did improve when he was back. And so he's definitely not a bad player.
Marshall Warren, the grad transfer from Boston College, a sixth-round pick, I believe, or was it seventh? I think it was a sixth-round pick back in 19. You know, I didn't think that, you know, kind of like everybody else, didn't have the best first half of the year, was, I think, kind of trying to fit into the system, find his pairing, and sort of find his spot on the team overall. He ended up with 4 goals and 14 assists for 18 points, not too bad. So he would be the second leading scorer on defense. You know, he was up and down, but I thought his last couple months were really, really good and really, really up. Had those 2 great goals against Michigan State. One is sort of the backhand flip that he gets right along the goal line in the Big Ten championship game, and then he scores to give, I believe, the Michigan lead 3-2. Or was it to tie the game 2-2 in Maryland Heights? Like, I can't remember which one it was, but it
gave them the lead.
Yeah, it was a nice pass from Truscott over to below the dot, and Warren puts it in. There's an argument that in the last month plus or so, he was the best defenseman on the team.
Yeah, I'd give him a B+.
That's exactly what I had, B+.
The first half of the season was, it was a little disappointing. It felt like it wasn't quite the player we thought we were.
You're kind of waiting for
him. And it's like, oh, this guy's just kind of a guy.
Yeah.
And then I think by the end of the season, he was their sort of best all-around defenseman, mm-hmm. or at least the one that played at all situations minutes. And like we said at the time, he really stepped up in the big moments. And he had an ability to show up and score big goals. He scored against Notre Dame in a big regular season game. He scored in the Big Ten championship game. He scored in the regional final. So he wasn't here very long, but he put his stamp on some memories that and left a real legacy. So
I agree. And he's a guy on this defense where you're like, I know he's a lot older, but if you had another year out of him in this system on this team, you'd think that he could really do a lot more. But you only get a certain number of years to play. The sixth guy who you kind of have to go with as number six is Steve Holtz, who probably, we're not privy to minutes, but I would guess he got more than any of the rest of the defensemen. He's a senior as well, has decided to sign with Kalamazoo. So his Michigan career has come to an end. He had 0 goals and 5 assists for 5 points. The one thing that you will remember about him is when Casey got hurt and he had to take on extra minutes in those 5 periods in Maryland Heights, he came up big and he was very not noticeable, which is something that is very positive for him as mostly a third pairing guy, where you would notice him, but not for the reasons that you'd want to notice him. And the reality is he's just sort of limited on his skates. Doesn't completely play to his size all the time. He's fine as like a seventh defenseman who can come in from time to time, but he just probably would not be in a top six that I would design at Michigan. I gave him a C given those last 2 games, but didn't really ever see kind of what you would want to see out of him.
Yeah, I think C or C minus is probably fine. He was definitely a liability for stretches of this season, but he was a little bit better late in the year and played okay in some of the biggest games.
Mm-hmm.
And solid Michigan career for him. Was not a touted player coming in or anything.
Wasn't necessarily expected to play. I mean, you
know, he's
going to be in the mix if it fell to him, which it did, and actually played a lot.
But. Yeah, he did play a lot.
The last guy who got significant minutes on defense this year was Luca Fantilli. He's a sophomore, obviously younger brother of Adam, and an older sophomore
He's the older brother of Adam.
Did I say younger?
Yeah.
Oh. It feels like he's the younger brother of Adam, but he's definitely the older brother of Adam. Had a goal and 7 assists for 8 points this year. You know, he flashed a few times. He's always been fine with the puck going up ice. He can move it a little bit. He has an okay shot, a decent passer. He just can be a liability in his own end. He's gotten pushed around. Guys go by him. He's turned the puck over in some bad spots. He's, you know, playable as, like, again, a 7th, 8th D who comes in from time to time and plays. But when he was playing every night next to Steve Holtz for series after series, you could just kind of see why, you know, both of these guys were probably not the best pair, but then also not, also why Michigan was struggling a lot on defense. So he held his own again in that regional in Maryland Heights when, you know, Casey's out and you're just like, all right, we're going to beat North Dakota with Steve Holtz and Luca Fantilli both getting minutes. And they did. And, you know, so props to him on that. But I would give him a C. I thought he was a step up from last year, but not much more than that.
Yeah, I probably put him in the same sort of C-ish range.
Mm-hmm.
Had a few puck-moving moments, but again, was mostly a liability for a lot of the year, so...
I mean,
it is,
you know,
what it is. He picked up an assist in the regional, though, against North Dakota.
Should be coming back, and there's always room for guys like this to make a jump and maybe get a little bit more out of him, maybe become a little older, stronger, wiser, knowing where to go and what to do, but
63% of his points against Lyndon Woodenstone.
Well, yeah, that's also probably when he was getting a lot of his ice time as well, at least on a per game basis. The reserves on defense now, you know, you have Brendan Miles and Josh Arrico.
These are all non-gradable for me.
I neither have got a point, and I don't think that either one played in a meaningful game. They both dressed at the end of that rough stretch in the last few weeks of the first half, but I don't know that they played. I do remember Arrico playing in that UMass series a little bit, and it did not go well. He just is very small. Brendan Miles, pretty much the same way. It's really hard to make any sort of comment. It's also hard to see, you know, with Michigan going into the portal and getting some guys and getting other players to return and bringing in freshmen, I'm not really sure if and when they will see the ice at Yost.
Yeah, they're scratch kind of guys. Haven't played enough for me to grade them.
That would be the extent of the defensemen that Michigan has iced this year. We can go on to goalies. Obviously, the top guy, Jacob Barczewski, was a grad transfer from Canisius in his 5th year. Went 20-14-3 with a 2.84. And then a 907 save percentage, did get a couple of shutouts, did get an assist. So good for him to get on the score sheet. Honestly, I think Michigan got what they could out of him. He's a limited goalie that generally plays better and well in structure, but just is not really a bailout kind of guy. He will make a hero save from time to time, but it's not, he's very not Eric Portillo in that way, who you can ask to do that, who did do that for Michigan for a couple of years. And I thought, you know, a little bit, aside from that regional against North Dakota and Michigan State, he kind of faded down the stretch, had his rougher games towards the end of the season. And then, you know, I don't really pin a lot of stuff on him in the BC game, but also he didn't do anything that was outstanding to keep them in it either. I gave him a B because over the course of the season, they didn't really have a backup, and he played every game, and I feel like if you got these numbers out of this particular guy that you're bringing in, that's acceptable.
Yeah, give him a B. Solid player, had a decent year, definitely wasn't an A-level goaltender, but relative to expectations, I think there was a there was a wide range of potential outcomes when you're importing an Atlantic Hockey goalie.
That's true.
And all I wanted was for him to not be so bad that it wastes a good roster. And in the end, he didn't.
No, and he showed up in two of the three biggest games, getting them to a Frozen Four. I mean, I don't know what else.
It was a roller coaster at some points in the critical portion of the season, but it rebounded enough in the NCAA tournament to salvage the grade. And overall, I'll remember him moderately fondly.
Yeah, I don't have any...
Nothing against him.
No, there's nothing real negative about Barczewski. His backup, in quotes, who played sparingly at best, Noah West, in his... Is this his third year? I want to say it was his third year with Michigan. He still has a year left somehow because he's older than Jack Tuttle. I don't know. But he went 3-1 with a 3.00 GAA and a .88 save percentage. Before I get into any of my takes on him, I want you to tell me the four games he got a decision in this year.
The Minnesota game.
At Minnesota?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a win, I would guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they won in overtime. Okay. Tell me his four decisions.
The second Minnesota road game.
Was a win.
Yep.
Yeah.
He started the first game of the year against Providence.
And
I assume probably...
And that was a
loss.
Yep.
And then probably he must have started one of the Stonehill and probably one of the Lindenwood
games. You got it. Good for you, Alex.
And he had a couple relief games in there, but I don't think he got decisions.
No, he played in a few games, but they started him in that first game. I thought it was pretty rough. He had two great periods in Minneapolis, and you're kind of like, whoa, you know, this is something. Michigan had a 3-0 lead, and then that third period was not something that we need to talk about again. We've done that enough times. It was fine bringing him in as a backup, and I've heard good things about him as a dude on the side and everything, but just not good enough for this level. I think in the end is just that's just the end result. I gave him a C because I don't know what you can really ask more from him, but
it's hard to even really be giving out a grade there.
And the last guy is Andrew Albano, who is a fifth year transferred from D3, I think. Didn't really see the ice for Michigan that I can remember.
Non-gradable player.
But I want to say that he came over and we debated in the press box some reviews. And I thought I enjoyed him coming over and offering his insights as to what he thought he saw. We went back and forth a few times. Seemed like a good fella. So shout out to Andrew Albano. Anything else from these guys or should we take a break?
Nope.
Come back and then talk about some forwards.
I can't believe I'm doing this. If you find yourself in the penalty box, you want a Michigan man arguing your case, call criminal law attorney and former prosecutor Jonathan Paul tonight. It's 248 and 924 9458. Or visit his old website at MichiganLawGrad.com.
Moving on to the forward side of the ice, we have four lines and then a couple of reserves. We'll go through each player and sort of discuss them by line or how I saw it saw best to fit them into lines in order to discuss them. The top line, the hero line, we'll just go with there since that was the most prominent for Michigan down the stretch, or at least in the second half anyway. Frank Naser centered that line, was a 13th overall in the 22 draft to the Chicago Blackhawks, had 17 goals, 24 assists for 41 points in about that number of games. I didn't think he didn't really reach the production of the rest of the line. He also moved around a little bit, playing with Shifsky at times on the second line. But he was still very good, generally overall. Had that, as it's now referred to, the Michigan 2.0 pass to Gavin Brindley against State for maybe the most electric goal we've seen this year. Very good in tight finishes is something else I noticed. Had some goals that he'd have from sharp angles. You know, he just didn't hit. There was all that hype in the off season about, you know, can he be Michigan's Hobie nominee? Can he take the place of Fantilli? Not maybe with the scoring heights, but basically replicating, at least the drawing the attention of the defense and of the scouting reports. I don't think he just really hit his ceiling
here. It felt like he was a year away from that.
Yeah.
And that this was more of a freshman season for him.
That's actually, well, I mean, he missed so much of last year. It's probably true. So I had him at a B plus.
Yep. I think that's fair. I'd put him probably at a B. Mm-hmm. He was a solid player, played different roles on power play, penalty kill. I mean, he racked up a lot of points, but this was a very, very high-scoring team, and they had some unserious games that bloated some of those numbers.
Yeah, that might be true.
But overall, though, a solid player and a guy that he had two goals in the Big Ten championship game. He had a goal against North Dakota. He had the big pass against MSU. I wished we could have seen one more year from him, but
yeah,
not a bad season, and hopefully he'll do well at the next level.
If you were going to tell me that one of Michigan's highly rated forwards was going to come back, he would have been the guy would have maybe not only guessed, but thought would be best for him.
He would have been the one.
Yeah, and so it's a little disappointing that he left, but not a bad player. In fact, pretty good, and we'll definitely have his highlights. On that hero line, Rutger McGroarty has already announced he's coming back. I was going to say he's going to be the captain, but it's probably still going to be Truscott, I would think, since Truscott will be back. Although
yeah,
we could have a debate there. McGroarty was taken one pick, literally, after Naser, 14th overall in the 2022 draft. He had 16 points and 36 assists for 16 goals, 36 assists for 52 points. I thought he was a lot better this year than last year, despite not scoring as many goals. I think he had 18 goals his freshman year, 16 this one, but he assisted on a lot more. I thought he became a bit of a better passer, developed his dot shot a little differently on the power play, scored from there after on some good passes. And I thought he was more physical and more of a mature player. You know, there's still some room for growth, obviously, but I was actually really happy with how he played. And if he left, I honestly, I wouldn't have been super shocked. I gave him an A overall.
Yeah, I thought he was Michigan's best player this year. I give him an A. He really was a force in a lot of phases of the game. Maybe didn't put up much in the NCAA tournament, but he was pretty consistent in scoring in the Big Ten tournament. He was pretty consistent this entire season. He put up 8 points in that first weekend against Michigan State in the two games.
Well, they also had, what, like 12,
a lot of
goals
that night. But yeah, he was pretty consistent week to week, and we saw when they went to St. Cloud and then South Bend the 2 weeks he was injured, mm-hmm. their offensive output really dropped quite a bit those weeks, and I think that was pretty notable too. So just a guy that was really a leader for the team, scored a lot. Really, no complaints with his play, and obviously he'll be probably their kind of most A-list star next season.
I would agree with that. The last member of the hero line was Gavin Brindley, who went early in the second round in 2023, about one full round after Adam Fantilli. He was a sophomore as well. He had 25 goals, 28 assists for 53 points. I love watching him. Like, he was a fun player to watch in his Michigan tenure. He's fast, good forechecker. He can score, he can pass. You always get effort out of him. It would have been nice to get one more, but I understand why and that he didn't. I think that he got about all he could as far as like growth levels out of coming to Michigan and what he allowed us to watch and how he developed as a player. It's hard for me to ask a whole lot more out of him either. I gave him an A.
Yeah, I would probably give him an A roughly, something like that. Brindley had a great season. Hopefully he'll do well at the next level because he was a really fun Michigan player. He proved that he could be a pretty consistent player despite not having Adam Fantilli, where a lot of his success came the previous year, and to get up to 25 goals is pretty impressive. The finishing talent is there. Just a good player, should have been a first-round pick, even though he slipped into the second. He had 4 goals in a game against Stonehill, which...
And the last one I remember, he didn't even celebrate. Like, it goes in, and he just kind of shrugs his shoulders.
Yeah,
and
but that, hey, he made a stamp. He'll always be in the Michigan 4-goal record book for that.
And he's the one that finished the Michigan 2.0.
Nazer pass.
Yep.
Good two-way player, competed all over, played roles on the penalty kill. Gave Michigan really two strong years.
And then the second line I called sort of the try-hard line, where you get sort of undersized, undervalued players, and they kind of made the most out of everything that they had. So this line I had with Garrett Shifsky is the first member of it, played some center on the top line, played some third line, played some second line, but in Michigan's groupings, I'm going to put him in their second line. He was a freshman, a 20-year-old freshman, so an older freshman, and he had 16 goals and 18 assists for 34 points in his first year in college hockey. It's just really hard to ask more from him. He drove some play. I thought he paired well with Nazer early, played some center, like I said, played some wing on the third line. He scored, he passed, he got to the net. It's just, this was a great recruiting find. And I mean, 34 points with equal goals and assists, basically, for a freshman on a team that excelled. Like, I can't give him anything less than an A. I don't know what else you want from him, at least in year one.
We talked about it a lot during the year, but Shifsky was their most effective 5-on-5 or most efficient 5-on-5 player. Mm. He scored 16 goals, but only 2 were on special teams. 1 power play goal, 1 shorthanded goal. That was among the best on the team. Brindley scored 18 even strength goals. So I think that would put Shifsky second. But yeah, really, really effective 5-on-5 player. And there were points in the year where he was really the only guy that was consistently scoring at 5-on-5.
That's
while
true.
Michigan was heavily power play reliant. And he had 2 points against North Dakota, 2 points against Michigan State in the regional. For a freshman who's not like the biggest guy either, and he just turned 21, so he played most of this season at age 20. Just a nice year, and I'd give him an A-, you know, one notch down from A just because he wasn't like the best player on the team, but really, I think met expectations and then exceeded them in some capacities, and I'm excited about him next season.
I agree completely with that. TJ Hughes was the next guy on this second line again. Played some first line, played some third line. They moved him around a lot, but in this configuration, fits into Michigan's second line, played center. He was a sophomore, kind of like the Shifsky, but the next year version of him, where he did a lot of different things. A 20-year-old guy kind of came in, not really heralded, but as a player who could just kind of fit in. And he had 19 goals, 29 assists for 48 points. Again, undrafted. Had some 5-on-5 struggles early, but then I thought really popped. He had those couple goals in the tournament. He could be overwhelmed at times. He probably will be Michigan's 1 or 2C, I would think, next year at least. I gave him an A-plus on the year. I just think that like when you look at what he was and what he came in as and how he's developed, I just don't know what else you could really have expected him to do. He was probably if there's a guy who's going to exceed expectations on the year, that he's right up there. 48 points from TJ Hughes, I will take that.
I give him an A-. Good player, had a nice season. A big key to Michigan's power play. I think Casey's probably the biggest piece, and then having the finishing talent and all that. But TJ Hughes may be lacking at even strength at some points in the year, but you can never deny that he can play on the power play. He had 24 power play points out of his 48. Just a demon in that regard. Good passer, can finish in tight on the power play, and is all right at 5-on-5. He picked up his game, I thought, at even strength later in the year. We were kind of dogging him at points in the first half for being a bit of a power play merchant, but then picked it up, and he'll play a nice role next season. Probably will be his last year, and then he'll probably sign as a UDFA next offseason. He turns 23 in November, and should be one of the better players in the conference as he ages into upperclassman status in the Big Ten.
Speaking of overachievers, Dylan Duke had a very nice freshman year, built on that pretty well with a sophomore year, and then his junior year was his best in Ann Arbor. I think he had 26 goals, 23 assists for 49 points. He was a fourth round pick back in 21. Wow. He was just Dylan Duke. He's great in front. He scores big goals. He just produced. I mean, the goal against State that he goes flying down the wing, curves in, and goes beats Augustine to the far post to give them the two-goal lead. I was not expecting that, and to see that was just another dimension to his game. You can't really ask anything more of him from this year. It would have been nice to see him from one more year. He's always fun to watch, does everything. Not the most talented hockey player, but just always produced in all of his years here. I have a soft spot in my heart for Casey just because watching him handle the puck, but it's hard to argue that Dylan Duke wasn't near the top of anyone's favorite players to watch play for Michigan either. I gave him an A+. You made a good point where I said, you know, it's hard for me to see him signing. And you're like, well, he did score 26 goals. And I was just like, you know, it doesn't register. Like Michigan gets these like high end first and second round picks that score a lot of points. And yet Dylan Duke leads the team in goals.
Yeah, he had 26 goals, 12 on the power play, 2 shorthanded, only 3 against London Wood and Stonehill, and he had 2 goals against North Dakota, 2 goals against Michigan State. That's and 1 in the Big Ten Championship game as well. So he really did pop when it mattered. His game continued to improve. He got better as a skater over his career. Finishing talent, especially in tight, also improved. It was kind of a linear goal progression from 10 to 18 to 26 over his 3 seasons at Michigan. Point totals ticked up as well. He was a contributor on the power play, on the penalty kill. He was all over the place and had a great season. So I'll give him an A+.
Yeah. All right. You do have a heart in there. all right. So then we'll move on to what would be more the third line for Michigan. Again, you know,
have to support my short Kings.
all right. So the first guy on the more consistent third line was Marc Estapa. Played a lot of center, played some wing at different times, but when it came down to it, was usually sort of in the middle. Was a good face-off guy. He was in his junior year, 5 goals, 4 assists for 9 points, not drafted. I think was markedly better than he had been in the past, and that maybe not in a production standpoint, but just from a puck mover, his skills seem to develop, like passing and moving and getting into the right place. He could always hit. I think he's probably best as a fourth liner, a decent penalty killer despite the one obvious error against State. But, you know, at some point you also have to put the puck in the net, and he only had 9 total points. We were down on him a little bit last year. He was more of a playable player this year. I give him a C+.
Yeah, I'll give him a C. Okay player, has his moments. The one thing he did improve on is that he had only 2 5-minute majors this year.
He didn't have as many minors, did he?
No, I mean, penalty minutes down from 89 to 46.
I mean, that's a drastic improvement.
It's a good job to cut it down. Still too many.
Yeah, I agree.
And hasn't necessarily added a ton offensively, and 80% of his goals were Lindenwood and Stonehill, which is also a bit of an issue. But
yeah. If he, like, he's a guy that, you know, next week we'll get into what we kind of can piece together as Michigan's potential team coming back. But he's a guy where you put him on the fourth line and with a couple of these guys we're going to talk about. And then you're like, you know, this is a very difficult fourth line to play against. Playing him up at 3C, like, not exactly kind of what Michigan would have wanted in terms of production and skating and all of that. Another guy who spent a lot of time on the third line, Moonlit. A little bit from time to time, depending on who was in and out of the lineup, was Josh Earnesy, who was in his first year at Michigan, his second year in college hockey, came over from St. Thomas. His transfer induced a fight between coaches, which was a fun off story.
Altercation
is what we'll go with. So clearly he was a guy that everyone wanted. 8 goals, 6 assists, 14 points, not drafted. You know, he flashed a few times, had a couple of 2-goal games, or at least one against Ohio State that I remember. Kind of would have liked a little more production, but his size and physicality in corners and in front, you know, is something that Michigan didn't really have aside from Mustapha, like what we talked about before. So being able to have another guy who could be really big. I mean, Duke was always a tough guy to play against, but he just never had that size. And Earnesy was like this moose in around the net. So I think, you know, in the right situation, could thrive. He might be best in a bottom six or maybe a fourth line role. But, you know, if the right situation came along and his skills developed, you know, you could see him. I was torn between a B and a C. I could go both ways on it. I liked some of the things he did because of what he brought. But again, only 14 points. That's too, I don't think I can give him a B for that. I think it's got to be a C.
Yeah, C plus is fine with me. Right. What I say about his season is it definitely made me think about improvement sort of down the line and what sort of player he could grow into.
Like projecting forward?
Yeah, because this season he's moving up quite significantly.
You mean in competition?
From St. Thomas to Michigan.
Yes.
And you have just the fact that a part of that season for him is just adjusting. It's adjusting to a new level of play, adjusting to new teammates, new system. But he's an interesting player. He's listed at 6'2", which is on the bigger side in college hockey terms. And
he's thick.
He's filled out. And when you watch him play, he doesn't play at a high speed for a lot of the game. And then you just, every so often, he'll get the puck in open space, and then he'll turn it on. It's like, wow.
He just gets this burst.
Yeah, he doesn't play at that speed a lot, but he's got that extra gear in him, that separation speed. You don't see that much, but you just kind of wonder what he could sort of do with that if he's able to
do that more consistently.
Yeah, kind of round out his game a little bit. So that'll be interesting, I think, to see next season with another year in the offseason more prepared for the Big Ten versus CCHA, where he came from, and what he could do working with Nerado. I think he's a player that could play up in the lineup with, and maybe if he learned to play around the net a little bit more, because he can play in the corners and the tighter areas, but he also has enough sort of grinder traits he can play down in the lineup too. Just an interesting player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a great find, and a guy, like you said, who this year was not going to be why they got him. It was for his next year and probably even the year after, he could be quite the specimen. The last guy who generally fit around the third line was Nick Moldenauer. He was a third round pick back in 22, was deferred a year, played in the USHL an extra year, was a freshman this year, ended up with 8 goals and 13 assists for 21 points. You know, he popped a little, didn't always play with the best players, so I think his production was going to be down a little bit, especially given the fact that he didn't get tons of power play time and was on the unit that didn't score quite as much, the second power play unit. But he did get 20-plus points as a freshman, and you know, I don't know how, we'll see how his development goes in the next couple of years, but he could be, you know, a 3-year, 4-year guy, depending on how that all sort of fills out. I would expect a bit of a jump next year. But I think this is, it's, he gave us a good freshman year. I'll give him a C.
Yeah, I think that's about in the right ballpark. Moldenhauer, he had his moments, and he's just going to need to keep bulking up, I think. 5'10" is what he's listed at, but his listed weight was 170. Hmm. And I think you'd ideally like that to get to maybe 180 or 185, just make him a little bit stronger on the puck.
Which will happen, I mean, right, when you turn 20, 21 years old.
And as his role will increase over time, and it's any freshman, you're adjusting to college hockey and all that sort of stuff. And he was still kind of a little behind the curve just because of the sort of forks in the road he had during his development process. And he was only 19 this season. Mm. He turns 20 over Memorial Day. So that's, he still got a lot of growing to do. But I think he showed us enough in his first season that I think that maybe he could be a guy on that Dylan Duke sort of path, right? Remember Duke? I mean, like we said, 10 to 18, then to 26 goals, right? Yep. You just keep getting better yep. each year, and that can be the case for the smaller guys as well. So he's got potential, and we'll see what he can do in the coming weeks.
Then mostly the fourth line, the guy who kind of, I would say spearhead. I don't know if spearhead is the right word, but the guy who's consistently on that fourth line, just very interesting to me. Keenan Draper, a sophomore, with 4 goals and 8 assists for 12 points. You know, the first note I wrote down for him was playable, because the previous year he did not seem playable. Like, you know, they rotated through guys trying to find the right combination of down the bottom end, and it was never going to be Keenan Draper. And this year it was, and he made plays. He forechecked well. He turned things over. You know, he added 11 points to his total, and obviously he played more games, but you know, there was some contributions there on the scoring end. And, you know, he's never going to be probably anyone that I want much above the fourth line, maybe third line if the situation is right. But he was a real fourth line player and you know, could play some center. PK'd, forechecked well, like I said. You know, I was very excited about him over the course of the season. I gave him a B.
I'll give him a B minus. Had a nice year. He started to emerge a little bit more as more than just the 13th forward. You started to sort of see some flashes, and I think next year is when you hope to kind of see it all start to see him get more to the, like, our Grow a Garrett Van Wy program.
Grow a Garrett Van
Wy. Has paid off as when you'd expect to see those dividends, but it was an encouraging year of progress.
I agree. The sort of senior on the fourth line, the guy who's been around a long time now, came in with Kent Johnson. Philippe Lapointe in his fourth year, 1 goal, 6 assists for 7 points. Not a drafted guy. Took that one ridiculous penalty that we'll kind of remember, but other than that, you know, he was sort of the adult on the fourth line. I always thought he also became playable on a consistent basis. Didn't really have the production, but you know, he had some plays that he made on a couple of goals with some nice backhanded passes, and could PK. He could do kind of a lot of things, but is probably never going to be a guy you want too far up in the lineup. It sounds like he'll be back. I haven't heard him signing anywhere, has nowhere to really go unless he, you know, seeks out a professional deal, but usually those are kind of done by now. So it seems like he'll be back. I don't know, depending on who they bring in, if his role will be as a rotational piece or if he will be on the fourth line. It seems like there are other guys that could push him off, but He was not a bad player for Michigan, especially on that fourth line when they didn't really have a lot of bodies and options to choose from. He was playable, so I gave him a C.
Yeah, that's fine to me. He was a guy that every so often he'd show up, but most nights I would not know he was playing unless I was looking for him.
Like, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, there he is. Is that? Yeah.
Very kind of nothing really happens while he's out there.
Which is fine-ish for a fourth line. As long as, again, as long as you can show up on the PK sometimes, you know, there can be roles for that. And then the last guy who probably played the most, who's probably will count on the fourth line, is Chase Pletsky, a transfer, grad transfer from Miami. He had one goal and one assist for 2 points. The assist quest finally ended in Minneapolis. That is, when I hear Chase Pletsky, I will always think of the puck that he puts in at the net that gets scored, I believe it was by Draper, if I remember correctly, and ends his 3-year assist quest.
But and he was going to have another, right? That got taken away by
but Luka couldn't hold it in, and because that was the PLP pass.
Yeah, the point pass. Minnesota game.
The front of the Minnesota game. But other than that, I mean, honestly, there's very little that I even recognize from him.
He was even more of the Philip Lapointe.
He was, I don't have anything against him, but it was 2 points is a D for me.
He finishes his last 50 games of college hockey between Michigan and Miami last year with one goal, one assist, 2.0 penalty minutes.
Yeah, that's not sure what's fully going on there, but but for him, assist quest over. Then the reserves who rotated in and incompletes. Well, there are a couple guys left. Tanner Rowe alternated with Pletsky for parts of the year, was a 20-year-old freshman, I believe. Played at times, had one goal. I believe it was against, I can't remember, Stonehill or Lindenwood.
It was Stonehill.
Stonehill. Zero assists. He had 1 point. I don't really have any notes on him. I don't really expect him to play tons next year unless he makes tremendous growth. It looks like Michigan's bringing in some guys and they return guys. And it feels hard for him to make the lineup unless he really blows up in the summertime. He was there. I gave him a D. I don't know what you want.
Yeah, that's a fine grade for me.
I know you got Tanner Rowe stories coming out of your ears.
he was there.
He was.
He played.
he played some games.
He had 19 shots in 25 games.
Well, yeah. And then the last guy who would have been a much higher, maybe second, third line, depending on had he not gotten hurt, and a guy I think we're both really looking forward to next year with, and a guy that we've heard really great things about off the ice, in a number of different ways. Jackson Hallam, third round pick in 2020, Vegas, I believe, took him. Gets injured in his eighth or ninth game. Unfortunate injury. It wasn't
Kevin Ware.
No, but it was not. I mean, you could see it coming, and you're like, this is bad, and gets a sort of a knee on knee, and it's a bummer because he had 3 goals and 5 assists in his first.
Some of that was Stonehill, but or not Stonehill,
Lindenwood.
Lindenwood, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean,
but he was showing some more flashes, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, his thing his freshman year was he's super fast, and you could see that, and then he added a little bit of skill and finishing, and then it looked like he was starting to build on it. He was going to, you know, this would have been a great year for him because they didn't have a lot of guys, so he was going to get his chances, and, you know, I'm kind of excited to see what he can do next year. I gave him an incomplete because he played 8 games and produced in them, but like you said, there's some Lindenwood involved, and, you know, I was fine with where he was when he was there, but you play 8 games, I'm not sure really what to take from it completely.
Yeah. Non-gradable because he didn't play enough, but hopefully he'll have a good season next year and be healthy.
So that's all the players that we have. We can go over sort of like the areas of the team and talk about them a little bit, grade them, and then move on to a couple of bits of news and notes. The offense scored 169 goals in 41 games, good for 4.12 goals a game, which was it second or third?
Let me look.
Really close. I mean, again, this is a Michigan offense that for the nth year in a row is blazing, scoring, moving the puck, doing really well. It's hard for me to give this unit anything less than an A when you're pouring in goals the way that they did.
Yeah, this is a good offensive team, and they were a good offensive team all year. They occasionally had issues scoring at even strength, but had a devastating power play that helped make up for it. You really can't complain about the offense until, I guess, the last game, but
yeah,
top five in goals for per game. Yeah, what more do you want?
Yeah, I agree. The defense, very similar to last year, gave up 125 goals in 41 games. That's good for 3.04 goals a game. You know, it definitely tightened up down in the second half and down the stretch. Got a little more consistent and then really good probably in the last, you know, month to 6 weeks or so. But it was not great at all for long times. And even in the second half, there were games where it was very not great. So, and it's, you know, probably what held Michigan back from being in the chase for the Big Ten regular season and a bit of a higher seed, although, you know, in theory it works out for them. They make the Frozen Four, but I'll give them a C because they cleaned it up at the end.
Yeah, I think that's fine. They were more in the D range for a little bit
most
of time
of the year.
There,
yeah.
But
yeah.
Then it did get better in the second half, so that's good. And
the thing that we want is like, all right, let's not do this every year. Let's remember where we are now and what we did.
Yeah.
When you're returning a lot of the same players, let's see if we can sort of start there instead of having to like start at the bottom and move all the way up again.
That would be ideal.
That would be really nice. The power play finishes at 34%, good for number one in the country by multiple percents.
One of the best of the last 15 years.
I mean, it's an A plus.
Hockey,
what so. Do you yep. want him to score at 45? Like, I don't
be,
know what you
can't be any better than that.
What are you looking for here? The penalty kill was at 78%. They did score six shorthanded goals. They were 42nd overall. But I did want to say that if post Stonehill, they had an 83% kill. So after the Stonehill series, which was the first sort of not real series of the second half, you know, 83 is starting to get to the range of where you're like, this is a good unit. And, you know, 78 is too low. But, you know, if you the units that we get nervous about with BC and Ohio State over the years are like the ones that push 89-90%. And you know, you get up to 83-85%. Like that's a pretty good penalty kill. Like Michigan's probably never going to have a 91% or an 89%, but 83, if you give me that every year, you know, I'll take that. I think overall they still get a C because I still had to watch that unit in the first half. But if you're just grading the second half, I'd probably give it a B+.
I give it like a C+ for the full year. I think they did make a lot of progress, and thankfully that counted. They were better for when it mattered, but the start of the year can't be tossed out.
Can't be that bad either. You know, the other thing was I was looking at this, they really only had two bad games in the second half, the first Minnesota game and then that state tournament game, actually. And if you take both of those out, they were up closer to 89%. But that is probably one of the things I will take into next year and say, hey, this is a good unit. You're going to bring back a lot of guys who can play on that unit. And let's see if we can start, you know, not at 72 again. Let's see if we could start maybe around 80 or in thereabouts. The goaltending, this was tough. You know, I think that, you know, Portillo didn't have his best season last year. He was really good the previous seasons, and so you're bringing in Barcheski as, you know, like you said, an Atlantic Hockey transfer, had good numbers, but the jump in competition was going to be a lot. After we watched him for a little bit, you kind of got a feel for what he was. You know, and then you add in a little bit of Noah West, who I almost called him Adam West. I don't think he's Adam West. Unless Barcheski's going to be Burt Ward. That's just not going to work. So you know, it's good, but we needed more games like the North Dakota and Michigan State regional final game. And if you get more of that, then you can start talking about better grades. But, you know, in the end, I think that it's probably somewhere around a B- for goaltending. The defense and penalty kill over the course of the year didn't help, but it was the power play and the offense that really buoyed up the goaltending and the defense and got Michigan where they needed to be. And then when the defense, goaltending, and penalty kill were all at their peaks, that was when you saw probably the best version of Michigan.
Yeah, I would say the goaltending is maybe a C+. was choppy for a lot of the year, was big in some big moments. It is what it is. It was acceptable for the most part.
Yeah. Okay, so that's our grading session for all the players and parts of the team. I mean, we could talk about coaching if you want. I think that, you know, I would give Nerado a decent grade and staff. I think that, you know, there were times it got squirrely, and if they were going to, you know, either, you know, miss the tournament, which was a real possibility in mid to late February, or sort of lose in the Big Ten tournament or in the NCAAs or not make it because of, well, they still can't fix the defense, still can't fix the penalty kill, you know, that kind of thing, then the grades are going to slip because, you know, this isn't the most talented Michigan team we've seen, but it's still probably a top 5 to 8 talented team in the country. And, you know, you can't have those kinds of results. But they did fix a lot of that stuff. And a lot of those things did get better. And while the players are the ones executing it, you know, a lot of credit does go to the coaching staff for making a few changes and getting a little bit better organization and developing some of these players. You know, not the best coaching job probably, because there were still a lot of things and it took a while to get to some of the desired results, but avoided a number of landmines that could have easily been there. So I'd probably give the coaching around a B for the year.
Yeah, I think I wrote in the piece last week sort of the two seasons now of Nerado, and I think he's done a solid job.
Mm-hmm.
He's last year felt like they got where they should have got, and then kind of some things happened in the one game against Quinnipiac, but
yeah.
Who cares? It's one game. And
well, some of us care, but
you can't base grades off of one game.
No.
And then this season, it didn't feel like they left any meat on the bones, really. Felt like they got about out of this roster what they could have gotten out of it.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the Frozen Four, and you're like, who are they better than?
Yeah.
Probably no one.
And I'd like the team to, again, be more defensively structured at the start of the year,
mm-hmm.
more situated from the beginning. But as a whole, this was a harder season for Nerado to navigate. He couldn't just sort of lean on one sort of exceptional player to drive a lot of things. And,
right.
and he had more uncertainty in net to deal with and
yep.
had to put together more of a roster himself. They had injuries and other things, and they navigated it pretty solidly. And I think now through two seasons, we have a decent sense of that as long as he is the coach, that I think they will be a pretty good offensive team.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'll have good offensive concepts and set plays, and their power play organization will be pretty good, and they'll be able to recruit at a pretty high level, at least among forwards. And then the question...
And they found depth guys in that recruiting.
And the guys they have coming in, you know, this class, they've got one first-round pick and then possibly like 3 second-rounders and some more beyond that. That's a pretty standard Michigan recruiting class. I mm-hmm. think that'll be the standard going forward. The 25 class, they've got a couple projected first-rounders, and that'll be interesting to see once he adds more of his defensive recruits and his goaltending, how he handles those. Those are questions for the future, but at the end of the day, the results kind of speak for themselves, and he's done a pretty solid job, and I think there's reason to think that they can continue to be about where they are in terms of the national picture, which is perennially one of the top 8-ish teams, as they have been for the past 3-4 seasons now.
I would agree with that. The last bit we'll get to is a couple of just news and notes. Michigan brings in a defenseman, Tim Lovell, from Arizona State, who looks like a pretty offensive guy with some okay defensive numbers as well. Where he fits in and all that we'll get into more next week, but I think it was a pretty solid pickup to add to an already, you know, crowded-ish defensive room, which is good after what we went through this year of barely being able to cobble together her defense. And they also add Logan Stein, who is a goalie from Ferris State with Barczewski-esque numbers from this year.
As good in previous years.
Yeah.
Tough to tell exactly what he's going to be. Probably will be in a tandem
with
one of the recruits coming in. So
yeah, we'll get more into that next week when we kind of break down how things could work out. And then Billy Whitelaw. Are we going to call him Billy? Bill?
Bill Whitelaw.
Bill Whitelaw. William Whitelaw. We'll call him Bill Whitelaw right now. Probably be corrected at some point, but comes over from Wisconsin as a third-round pick in what draft?
The 2023 draft.
Okay.
The most recent one, I believe.
So he will probably... He had, I think, what, 17, 18 points as a freshman, so not too dissimilar from Nick Moldenhauer. He looks potentially like he could be a middle six guy. I mean, again, you know, we'll lay out some...
I think the take on him from the first glance is that he is making a move to fit his skill set, shall we say, because we talked about in a previous hockey cast, I don't remember if that was the lost one or not, but there's been an exodus
from Wisconsin
players, where Mike Hastings has a more defensive style that seems to prioritize older players, and
that does not appear to be Billy Whitelaw.
No, he appears to be an offensive, very fast skater with a lot of high skill, and I think it makes a lot of sense, and maybe he'll get more power play time at Michigan. It would not be shocking if he came over and then really hit it off. MSU had success with Isaac Howard in a similar way. These kinds of players are trying to sort of reclaim their careers, so to speak. So we'll see how it works, but he helps patch some of the holes from the departed NHL guys.
Sounds good, Alex. Anything else you have for us, or should we take our grades and look ahead to next week when we will discuss what hypothetically will be Michigan's roster for next season?
1 week to go. Listen to Michigan Hockey Cast 6.25 for Alex Drain and David Nasternak next week, the season finale, where you will learn everything you need to know about every new player on the roster.